Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, and those that don't know. I'm Lounges. This is Midwest Beat, a program all about the arts. And tonight we are going to dabble in some of the darker arts, the art of magic, the art of illusion. We're going to meet two purveyors of that dark art. They go by Magic from the Asylum. I'm talking about Nikki and the one and only April, who makes him look good. We're going to meet them. They are a husband and wife team who are going to be performing this Sunday at the Record Bin, a free performance in honor of Halloween. These guys have been performing all around the area. They're going to be appearing at some magic haunted houses, rather, and you're going to find out more about them. They're called Magic from the Asylum, and we will take a trip into the asylum. But first, as always, let's start with a little magic.
It's a kind of magic, a kind of magic. Never believe it's not so. It's magic, you know. Never believe it's not so.
He's a magic man, yeah. Oh.
Living a life of illusion. Is it an illusion? Is it real magic? Let's ask a professional. Nikki Jade is here. He is the guy that'll be performing as half of Magic from the Asylum. He's the crazy half. And he's brought with him his lovely wife, Angel Rain, who assists him in his madness. And we're going to step into the asylum for the next hour. Is it illusion or is it magic? Tell us, Nikki, as a professional, what do you prefer to be called?
Well, first of all, Tom, thank you for inviting me here. It's an honor and pleasure to be here. You know, that's a big question. Is it you prefer magician, you prefer illusionist? I personally don't get bent out of shape if somebody uses the word magician, but I do prefer the term illusionist. I believe it encompasses better what April and I do on stage.
Mm-hmm. Even though you're called Magic from the Asylum.
Oh, absolutely. But the term magician, I believe, people have a preconceived notion of what a magician might be or what a magician might do or look like. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, what we do is anything but what people may think.
Okay. So you don't come out in the top hat with a magic wand and pull rabbits and funny little critters out of your hat.
Oh no, sir! No, sir! It's quite a bit more contemporary. We do perform classic illusions of magic. But as I said, we put a contemporary twist on it and try to put our own spin on it.
Okay. Now, you have brought April with you. Tell me how April got involved in the act. Has she been here since day one with you?
Well, she's been supporting me since day one.
Okay.
And
because those of us in the arts always need a good woman behind us supporting us.
Oh,
that is testimony.
Behind us, next to us, in front of us, yes, sir. But about 3 years ago, I found myself in need of an assistant at a booking, and I asked my wife April to join me, and she graciously joined the act, and mm-hmm. We have not looked back since. And she's brought quite a bit to the act, in my opinion.
Okay, April, this one's for you. What is it about this? When Nikki said, "Hey, I'm going to be a magician. I'm going to be an illusionist. I'm going to do really strange things. Will you be a part of that?" What was your first reaction? Because you have a real life. I mean, you have a real job, and this is kind of his thing, and you've been sucked into it like a vortex and do very well with it. But what was your first thought? Like, this is crazy?
Well, not that it was crazy. I was just a little nervous because I wanted to be there for him mm-hmm. and be that good assistant for him. And I'm a little laid back, a little quiet. So I had to build up my confidence to get out there and be by his side, not just to look like an equal, but to look maybe a little above of what he is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you're at every show now?
I am.
Okay.
Yes.
Have you had any, instead of illusions, delusions maybe, of becoming the great April, wearing your own show, starting your own show, sidekicking? How does that work? How do you share the spotlight, so to speak?
Very well.
Okay.
I don't think either one of us takes away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I just want to be there with him, help him through what he needs to get done, and do my part of what I need to get done. And this is his dream, and I'm living it with him.
I like that. Yeah. That's a great answer. We need more women like that to say, you know, we're going to share in that dream and push you a little harder. Nikki, how has the show progressed? Well, tell us about the early days when you first got the notion, and where did the notion come from? Where did the seed get planted? He says, you know, one day I'm going to do magic tricks.
Well, I had a fleeting interest in it as a child that was quickly dismissed from grown-ups in my life.
Okay. So you're talking like the Marshall Brodeen card deck kind of thing, like we all had of you know, the earlier generations?
Yes, sir. That's
you're a lot younger than me, but maybe that's even...
Well, my older brother...
Remember that?
My older brother actually had that magic kit, and that was my first introduction into magic. And then a little later on in my preteen years... I got introduced to Penn and Teller through a cult classic movie that they're in, Penn and Teller Get Killed, which doesn't sound like a comedy, but I assure you it is a comedy. And that would have been the early 80s. And once again, the seed was planted then, and as I said, it was quickly dismissed by the grown-ups in my life, only to emerge many, many years later. Oddly enough, April and I were watching TV, late night TV, flipping through channels about 11 years ago or so, and came across a fella on TV by the name of Chris Angel doing some amazing things. And I turned to April and I said, "My God, does that look like fun?" And she looked at me with the most sincere look and said, "I think you should try that. I think you would be good." The rest is history, as they say.
11 years ago, Chris Angel was just really getting started, wasn't he?
He was just becoming a big name. He had just become a household name. In fact, we recently had the privilege of seeing him in Joliet at the theater down there at his Raw tour. And one of the lines that he said on stage that stuck with me is, "It took me 18 years to become an overnight success." And I love that line. I absolutely love that line. But that's where the seed was planted, and it began with simple coin vanishes and things like that, and escalated from there.
Now, Chris Angel is kind of like this generation's David Copperfield, I guess. I remember working and interviewing with different artists in my early years of journalism. Harry Blackstone Jr., who was a traditional magician and embraced that word. He said, "Don't call me an illusionist. I do magic." Because he's old school. And he wore the tux and did the rabbits out of the hat and the magic wand and things. Then, of course, there was Doug Henning, who was the hippie magician who made things disappear. And then Copperfield came out and kind of took over the whole scene with his giant, bigger-than-life kind of stuff. He made buildings disappear. I mean, he made jets disappear. Did you ever wonder, how the heck do you do that? I mean, you make things disappear and appear and do different things in your show. But to do something that large scale, I mean, it baffles me. I still can't get my head around how he did some of that stuff. Have you figured it out? I mean, I'm not going to ask you to share a magic secret, but have you figured out how that kind of stuff works?
Well, there's some things that I have discovered and learned about magic, and honestly, it's a little bit. I don't want to use the word depressing because that's wrong.
Okay.
But when you look behind the curtain, it really
bursts the bubble.
Yeah, it bursts the bubble. It doesn't make it any less spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it any any less grandiose, but it does, you know, when you're viewing the magician from the magician's view, it really kind of takes away. It kind of takes the wind out of your sails a little bit.
Wow. Now, I remember Copperfield telling me that they had a think tank group. They would go into this, like, building where he had all his props and things, and they would work up ideas and stuff like that with the team. How do you create your illusions? I mean, is it something that the two of you sit at home and say, what if we did this? What if we did that? And how long does it take to, on average, obviously each one would be different, but on average, how long does it take to master it to the point you're ready to perform it publicly?
Well, the creative process is an interesting one, and believe it or not, it usually starts with an idea of an illusion, and then, as we've talked before, our act is set completely to music. Mm-hmm. So it starts with an illusion idea and a song. And almost always, I can speak about everything we do. I hear a line in a song and I say, that's it. That's the song I want to use. And I build the illusion around that. And usually April, when I bring a song to her, this is really great on her creative end. She'll tell me, well, that's a great song. Let's try this one. It's a little more modern. Let's try this version of that song. It's mm-hmm. a little more modern. And that really kind of makes the show, it doesn't seem so old-fashioned, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
So how many songs? So it's choreographed. I mean, you don't speak, either of you.
No. That's
not during the show.
That's correct. We practice a type of magic that's referred to as silent magic, which is we do not speak, we do not. We're going to make this rabbit disappear. We don't do anything like that. Everything is choreographed like a dance or like a music video.
Okay. So is the not speaking part kind of an homage to Teller, since he was an inspiration?
I would say that it was a happy coincidence. Okay. Let's call it a happy coincidence.
So April, you helped pick the music and the soundtrack for this, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Do you play full songs as an edit? Who does your editing producing side? Are you guys hands-on with that?
No, not at all. I have a very close friend of mine that's he works with sound, and he used to be a DJ, and he mixes my music. He edits things when I needed them edited, mm-hmm. and puts them together and that sort of thing. And sometimes I use full songs. Other times I use just 2 minutes of a song. The songs have segues in between them of other songs that kind of guide you along this magical journey in the asylum.
All right. Speaking of music, let's play something right now that will lead up to our next segment, in which we're going to talk about the actual show that they're bringing on Sunday to the Record Bin. This is something that an old friend of mine turned me on to. I had the pleasure of interviewing this gentleman a number of times. This is Mr. Roger Taylor, drummer of Queen.
Almost like Christmas, but the calendar's wrong. The silence is deafening, but the feeling is strong. Magic is loose. We'll be right back.
Magic is loose in the world tonight. It certainly will be on Sunday night. I can't help say that. Every time I say Sunday, I think of US 30 drag strips. But anyway, we're going to be unleashing magic in the back room of the Record Bin in downtown Hobart, 218 Main Street. Normally, Sundays are reserved for musical performances. But this time, because it is Halloween, we've talked with April and with Nikki, and we're going to bring in the magic from the Asylum show. And this is a unique situation because I've never done anything like this. Let's start off before we talk too much about this. You've been gigging for a while now. That was a few years ago. You came up with the idea to do this. You and April have put it together, the basic structure of the show. What was your first public performance when you finally had the nerve to go out and say, I'm going to do some stuff in front of people and hope I don't choke?
Well, actually, the I would have to say the first performance that I did would have been at, can I say the place? I was
oh, at? Sure.
Okay. It would be at the Fox Art Gallery in Lake Station.
That's Georgia, right?
That's Georgia. That's correct. Yeah.
She does a lot for the area.
Absolutely.
Definitely plug her.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's a wonderful woman and just she has open mic nights there and everything. And I asked her if I could come perform. And this was the first 15 minutes. It was only 15 minutes long. It's all I had.
Okay.
And she graciously let me perform there, and that would probably be the first time I had the nerve to go out in front of people and perform.
Was it a good crowd?
It was a really receptive crowd. It was a good crowd. They were very gracious. Is that the right word I want to use?
Mm-hmm.
And because, again, Georgia does a lot of music. She has a lot of musicians, and this was something different. And I've since performed there many, many times. I actually go there and bounce new illusions off the crowd.
So that's like your test market.
That's my test market.
They're the beta crowd.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But that was the first one.
How long ago?
What would that have been? That would have been.
I think she's been there 5 years.
Yeah, man. About 5 years ago.
Okay. Five and a half.
Yeah.
Now you've gone on. Last time you were here, you were talking about a magic conference or convention or something that you have sometimes gone to?
Well, no, I belong to a magic club in
magic
the area.
Magic club.
Yeah, magic club in the area. It consists of, we have anywhere from 15 to 30 members that show up from time to time. Most of us perform. Some of us just consult. We get together once a month.
And share potions.
Absolutely. we share potions and secrets and spells and ideas and such, and it's a lot of fun just to get together with like-minded people and discuss the thing you like doing. So.
Now, you know, with musicians, it depends on the group and where you're at, but sometimes there is some horrible rivalry, and then there's others where the camaraderie is and brotherhood is moving. What's it like in the magic world? Is there a lot of rivalry, or do you guys basically support each other because there are so few of you versus hundreds or thousands of musicians?
I'm trying to tap dance around that answer, Tom. I will say this. I will say that there was a magician who had some off-color remarks about Nikki Jade, and all I could do was smile and say, he knows who Nikki Jade is.
Huh? There you go.
That's all I could do.
Hey, like they say, any press is good press first.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So
very good.
That's how I'd like to answer that.
Okay. Well, I know that that you have had some mentors, and I know, in fact, one of them, I believe, is going to be opening for you, the Reverend?
That is correct. The Reverend has graciously agreed to join us on stage at the Record Bin, and do some really bizarre stuff.
Now, that's actually who introduced me to you.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
I went to the library to see him perform and talk and do a lecture on the art of illusion and other things. He kind of works illusion into everything.
Very knowledgeable man.
Finances. He talked about history, and somehow he worked illusions into it all, made it interesting. Taking people's shoes, as I recall.
That's correct. I believe he had yours.
Yes, he did take my shoes. And in the back of the room, there was Nikki Jade looking very rock and roll. And I thought, wow, this guy here looks like he should be in a metal band. And then the Reverend comes up. He goes, you need to meet him. He's a young talent in the area. And, of course, you already knew of me. And it was like we hit it off right away, and we knew this was kismet.
Yes, sir. That is correct. It was Yes, that's about the way it went down.
Now, what was it about the Reverend, since he's going to be at this show and the people that are listening that come out are going to meet him and see his show, what was it about the Reverend that that helped you as far as, I know he's older.
Yeah, well, as I said, he's very knowledgeable, especially mm-hmm. with the history of magic, which is something I'm lacking in. Because I didn't come about magic the traditional way, where I bought a book and I bought a deck of cards and I began that way. That's not how I just jumped in head first.
Okay.
And when you jump in head first, you realize, oh wow, it's up to my chest. And the Reverend come by and said, well, here, let me help you, and, which is what he
before
did.
Before you drown.
Before you drown. Yes. And he kind of pointed me in the right direction, and his style is. It's different. It's mm-hmm. not. It's not like your traditional magicians,
right. which is the same with you.
Yes, sir.
So you two are a unique combination here. You're so far apart individually, the two of you, but yet you're both so far apart from the norm.
That is correct. Yes.
So this is like alternative illusion day or something.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay. Now his show is called Purveyor of the Bizarre, and I don't want you to give too much away, but I'm sure you've seen it. Tell us a little bit about what to expect from the Reverend. And again, he's the opening act, so you do not want to be late because he's going to do just a short set of some very cool stuff. What kind of stuff can we expect?
Well, I hate to speak for him because he has such a repertoire, you know, he showed me some things he was thinking about doing and told me a few things.
So you don't even know for sure.
No, not for sure. I can't, like I said, he has such a repertoire that it's an arsenal of illusions, if you will.
Wow.
So,
well, I hope he brings the one that you kind of hinted at with the bells.
Well, I can't speak for
right.
him. So.
I don't want to say what it is. You have to come. But if it's the one that has the bells, that'll make your skin crawl.
I am convinced that everything he does is going to make your skin crawl.
Which is why this show on Sunday, for the first time in the history of the Record Bin, is going to be age restrictive. It is 16 and older, because this show... Both of our acts are for mature audiences. Nothing bad, risque, or anything like that. It's just that some of the stuff that you guys do could be a little upsetting, disturbing, shocking, maybe, to young people and those with faint of heart, as we say.
Yes, that's correct. In fact, one story comes to mind. In 2017, when April and I were working the corn roast, we were doing both nights, Friday and Saturday. We were doing three shows. Friday went off without a hitch. We did our three shows. And then Saturday, I got a phone call before we left to go do the show. And it was somebody from the Chamber of Commerce and who instructed me that if you want to perform tonight, you need to hang up signs that say 13 and older. Apparently, somebody had complained about some of the things. And again, like you said, there's nothing risque. There's no coarse language.
Right.
There's no nudity or anything like that. But some of the things we do, it's not for young children.
Right.
In fact, again, from that same show, The Corn Roast, the wee ones – I'm sorry, what is the
Bellaboo.
Bellaboo had a booth set up across from us, and the young lady there, she came running over, and she says, oh, this is so great. We're looking for a magician to come to Bellaboo. And I stopped, and I said, I'm going on in 5 minutes.
You'll see.
Watch my show, and if you still want to hire me, I'll be more than happy to take the gig. Which she thanked me after the show and said, no, I don't think you're going to work for us.
Right, right. Now, what's neat, too, is that not only do you guys not talk and you use music, and it's contemporary music mostly. I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but I know you used to use Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, we still use Marilyn Manson, yeah.
So how many songs in all do you think is in the medley of the 45-minute hour show, whatever you're doing now?
We do about 40 minutes. Okay. There's 7 illusions in that 40 minutes, so there's 7 songs.
So each illusion has its own song.
Each illusion has its own song, and then in between the illusions, there's usually anywhere from a minute to a minute and a half segue song that will lead you into the next illusion. As I said, each illusion bleeds into the next.
Right.
So, and I've always said this. I've said, if you've seen one illusion, it might not make sense. But if you see the whole show, okay, I see where he's going with this.
Comedians are like that, too.
Yes. Yeah.
You'll do a bit. Carlin was known for that. You'll do a bit, and then he moves on. And then he goes back to that bit.
A callback,
It comes all full circle.
Right, exactly.
So the music will be playing. There will be no dialogue until after the show. And at that point, I'm going to have the opportunity to take questions from the audience, and you're going to be so kind to oblige just the two of you, so people can ask questions. But of course, you're not going to give anything away.
No, absolutely not.
So don't ask them, how did you do that?
The answer will always be the same, Tom. Magic.
Magic. The show is from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Again, that's this Sunday, a special performance for Halloween. We couldn't think of a better artist to have in. We thought about, well, what kind of music can we do? We thought, what about doing Magic 2 music? And, of course, Nikki Jade came up and said, I'll do that. So you've got some other stuff going on besides doing this show Sunday at the Record Bin at 218 Main Street, 4 to 6 p.m. You are out and about in the region for the Halloween season, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Actually, this Friday night, again, may I plug all this?
Sure, you can plug it all.
This Friday night and Friday, November 1st, and Saturday, November 2nd, those three dates, from 8 to 10 p.m., April and I will be performing, not the entire show, we'll be performing excerpts from the show at Tour of Terror Haunted Attraction. That is at 563 West 600 North, Hobart. It's actually the Blast Camp. I don't know if you're familiar with Blast Camp.
Yeah.
So they turned it into a haunted attraction during October.
And that's right off of 30.
130 off of 130. 130 and okay. 600, yeah.
Okay.
And they contacted me and seen if I was interested in coming there and performing for the folks in line as they, you know, you wait, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes in line to go through there, and that'll keep them occupied.
So you kind of walk along the masses there and perform, or do they have to come to a certain spot in the line before they get to you?
Actually, we went there October 1st or the first Friday in October to see exactly what they had planned. They built a stage for us right in front of where they line up. So this is pretty cool. So you know, I won't have to walk through the audio, but we will be talking. We'll be breaking character. We'll be doing stuff to music as well. And we'll be actually trying some new stuff, some close-up stuff that we're kind of tiptoeing in new territory with this.
Are you going to debut anything new at the Record Bin?
Maybe we'll do something after the show.
If they're responsive,
if they want to see something new and they're not too freaked out, maybe after the show we can try some new stuff. I think we can do something like that.
Okay. Every time I think of shows that deal with some of the macabre and some of the more disturbing things in today's world, I look back and I laugh because if you may be too young to remember, but when Frankenstein first hit the theaters, they actually gave out smelling salts because people were passing out and running out of the theaters. Frankenstein with Boris Karloff.
Sure. Well, actually, I'm familiar with the movie. I was fortunate enough to watch a lot of old movies with my father, Frankenstein and Dracula and all those sort of things.
The old Universal.
Yes, sir. And he really liked that stuff. And I could see that.
That was so cutting edge then.
Absolutely. It was a different time.
So. Yeah. I read that when I first started getting into monster movies and building the Universal monster models and things, which, by the way, you can see at the Hobart Library. My exhibit is officially up. I've got life masks of all the famous actors, Karloff and Bela Lugosi and Christopher Lee and Vincent Price and Alfred Hitchcock. And, of course, I've got all my 1968 Universal Aurora models, all made when I was 10 years old, and they are still there. So you can see them up until the end of the month, but not to sidetrack too much. But, the Frankenstein thing, when I heard the people literally were fainting and they had paramedics and stuff on duty and they issued little vials of smelling salts, I thought, who's telling me this? You're yanking my chain, you know? And I found out, I researched, and it was true. They actually, there was a warning about if you have, you know, heart failure, you have this, do not see this movie. And now you look at it and you kind of chuckle.
Sure.
It's kind of like Reefer Madness now, you know? That was a serious movie, and now we laugh.
Absolutely.
Wow. So you said about 40 minutes on average. How long does an illusion last?
The illusions last anywhere from 2 minutes to 5 minutes. I try to keep it in that in that area, in that time frame or that area, mm-hmm. basically so I don't lose anybody's attention, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
It's I guess, again, it's the formula like the music video. You know, I don't want it to go too long. I want to keep their attention and then move on to something. Bam, 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 move on to something next.
So it's kind of one of those things, well, if this one isn't lighting your fuse, stick around. 2 minutes, it's going to change. Like region weather.
Absolutely.
Okay. Wow. Now, we're talking about how we've compared it to music videos. We've talked about the music that's in it, the editing process that they do for that. The other thing that's very video-like is your costuming. You guys both come out in black leather and look very rock and roll. You've got the long hair going, and April, you've got this really cool outfit on, and you're all decked out, and you guys walk in. I mean, it's like you're in the presence of greatness just right there. You walk out from behind the curtain. It's like, okay, it's showtime, because there's no way this is not the couple that's going to entertain us. Where did the idea for the costuming come? And April, in particular, your stuff, you can't really like go out and just buy off the rack, I don't think.
No.
I shop for women's clothes, but you know, I would think, because they're pretty unique.
No, I actually had to go online, and it actually came from a lingerie store.
Really?
And I kind of had in mind what I wanted to wear. And believe it or not, it popped up on there, and I clicked yes and bought it.
And when you say lingerie, I don't want people to get the wrong idea. It's not like it's super sexual.
No.
But it's kind of Xena-ish, yeah. You know, warrior princess-ish. You look bad.
It really fits the show.
Yeah.
It really does. It goes with everything we do in the show.
I looked at Jose. He's like, what are you going to say? Don't say that.
Tom, I guess we should tell the listeners that April Reign is actually spelled R-E-I-G-N,
uh-huh.
And that's not on accident.
Like a reign of terror.
That's not on accident.
So, but when I first saw you, I thought, wow, you look kind of like you should be right out of a Xena episode.
Thank you.
Because it looks cool. Your hair is done right. You got the necklaces on. And Nikki, you, it's funny, and I don't know if this is something really to share, but I think I'm going to share it anyway because you told me. at your day job, which we will just not even worry about, but you were kind of working through something in your head. You were on your lunch hour. I remember you telling me this at the store. And you're standing outside. It was a nice day. And you're trying to think. And for those of us, or those of you that are in martial arts, you might relate this to doing your katas. I remember we would stand out and we would like do our katas, almost like a Tai Chi thing. And you were out there doing that on your lunch break. It's like, okay, I ate my snack and now I got 15 minutes left. And you were going through the motions with like headsets or earbuds in.
That's correct.
And one of your coworkers was watching you from afar and thought, he's lost his freaking mind.
That's correct. Yeah. So, and I actually got—I actually ended up booking a gig for April and I through that.
Hysterical.
He was watching me for about 15 minutes, and he thought for sure that this guy is off his rocker. I'm pantomiming. I don't have any props in front of me, and I'm pantomiming.
And you're
everything.
In work clothes.
And my work clothes, exactly. And you know, he told me later on. He says, "I see this guy. He's waving his hands in the air. He's smiling. He's winking at people that ain't." That aren't there, and so yeah, it was actually very comical, and again, as I said, interestingly enough, you brought the costumes up. That particular gig that we played, mm-hmm. can I say what it was?
Sure.
Okay, it was the Soulshine Music Fest down in Monterey, and that day it was July.
Third week of July.
It was 98 degrees outside.
In leathers?
In leather.
Oh. They have been dry cleaned since then, folks. Trust me.
Yes, they have.
That's in his rider.
It was miserable, Tom.
Wow. And you were out there 40 minutes in the sun in leather.
That's correct, yeah. That's
trying not to make any mistakes that could be lethal.
I don't want to get
right.
gross here, but as soon as we took our bow, I stood up and I felt lightheaded and had to run off stage and vomit.
Okay.
Excuse me, because it was so hot.
That's crazy. So would that number among your most difficult shows so far then?
I would say so. I would say so. We performed outside before when it was hot. We did the Vegas Cafe on Memorial Day weekend one year, and it was 93
yeah.
degrees.
Mm-hmm.
That was a shortened show, though. That wasn't 40 minutes. I think we did 30 minutes that day.
Right.
And then, of course, we'll be dealing with the cold weather at the haunted house, because that's outside as well. And
the leather's just as bad in the cold because there's no insulation.
There's no insulation. It's just as bad. In fact, April won't be wearing her costume for that. She'll be in street clothes for that.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand that. Wow. So what is the game plan? Last time we talked, you were getting out there and you were starting to get your name out there. Now you've done the Soulshine Fest. You're going to be doing this show. Not that this is a really big one in your resume, but, you know, it's cool. I'm proud to have you guys in.
We're honored to be there, Tom.
But this is you're getting steps now. You're going places, so to speak. What is the game plan? If you can project in, say, the next year to 2 years.
Well, you know, we'd certainly like to do some bigger venues, maybe some local theaters around here that would have us. Just trying to get out in front of more crowds and different people. We're not proud. We'll take any time slot.
All right. To play bigger rooms, though, your show in the beginning, you kind of start off with some traditional things.
Sure.
And a lot of it's sleight of hand, which is close-up magic, as they call it. If you're in a bigger room, how does the audience relate to that? Would you use cameras if you were in a bigger room and screens like the concerts do?
I would like to do that. And again, that's if I can go back to and I don't want to keep referring to Chris Angel, but when we saw Chris Angel, that's how he had it set up. It was just like a rock concert. He's on stage. He's got two screens on either side of it, and there's cameras pointed at his hands at all times.
So he does sleight of hand, too.
Absolutely. He did close-up. He did Big Illusions.
Okay.
But the close-up stuff, there was a guy right on stage with the camera, and so everybody could
see. It doesn't lose anything, then.
It loses nothing. Okay. Absolutely not.
Because that would be my fear. It's like, okay, you're playing a big venue, and you're past the 10th row, and it's going to be hard to see.
Yes.
So if you got it on camera, are you going to lose the effect by watching it on the TV as opposed to seeing it up close? Because you almost think like, oh, there's some camera trick there.
Well, that's a double-edged or a double-sided coin, I guess I should say. Okay. Sure. Immediately, someone might think, well, there's a camera trick. But the other side of that coin is that camera's been on his hands the entire time. There's no way he could have done what he did, losing something. I mean, certainly it's more intimate if you're right on top of the magician. But as far as if you're seeing a video screen, no, I don't believe it loses anything. I believe, like I said, I think people may say, "Well, I'm watching this right here. I can't believe what I'm seeing."
Okay, your promo shot has you in a straitjacket.
Yes.
Am I to assume that a straitjacket is part of the show?
We do a straitjacket escape. Okay. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's actually the finale of our show is a straitjacket escape, and it's old school Houdini escape. Mm-hmm. And
Alice Cooper.
Sure, Alice Cooper. Yeah, that's in fact.
I've seen him do that close up. I still can't figure it out.
Well,
either.
There's no gimmick. Those are straitjackets, and you're escaping them. It's I don't want to sound the wrong way, but I could put you in that straitjacket, and I promise you, you're not getting out of it, Tom.
Right. Oh, I believe you. I'm sure. Now, do you have the audience come and test the locks and all that kind of stuff? April, do you assist the audience in making sure they know it's real?
Yes. We have two volunteers that come up. We have a woman and a man that come up.
Out of the audience.
Out of the audience. You know, volunteers. And they come up. The woman does her buckles, you know, and I'm right there while she buckles them, and then we test them, you know, in front of her to make sure, you know, they're buckled right. And then the man does the last two buckles, and again I test them and show him, you
know, the buckle that goes
yeah.
Okay. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Some of them like, I'm not touching that. I'm like, it's okay. You'll be fine.
April will reach under and hand you the strap.
So we have the volunteers, and okay. It's a lot of fun. So that way they can see that, wow, this is for real.
Have you ever had, obviously, at some point, whether you're a musician or an athlete or something, once in a blue moon, something goes wrong. Have you ever had that happen on stage? I'm sure when you're working the act out, you've had some snafus happen. But you're on stage, the spotlight's on you, the audience is watching very closely and intently, and all of a sudden, you're like, oh, crap.
Absolutely.
That's happened?
Absolutely, Tom.
Okay. Is it easy to recover from?
No, not, okay. not at all. If I may, I can sure. give you two quick stories.
All right.
You've seen the Razor Blade Act.
Yes, I have.
And like I said, we did six shows at the Corn Roast. One of the shows, the Razor Blade Act screwed
which
up.
Which is one of the reasons
bad.
That you have to be 16 and older.
That's correct, yes. It screwed up real bad. And
I'm scared even.
Well, I'm not going to go into detail yeah. except that April came running over and I stopped her and my brother stopped the music. I had to go behind the curtain and straighten things out. Because it was going to end very badly. And
wow.
I simply,
yeah, these are real razor blades.
There's nothing phony about these razor blades. These razor blades are absolutely real. Yeah. So we had that happen.
Okay.
And this, I'll just go ahead and tell you.
Okay.
I was at a magic contest, and we walked in, and I walked in like a rock star.
Okay.
I had this place. Oh, this is first
you
place.
You owned it, right?
It
there.
Was first place was as good as mine. And we were doing a straitjacket.
Mm.
We called the volunteers up. They locked me in. We start the routine, you know, with the music and everything. And April's clapping and the crowd's clapping along. And I'm getting ready to escape the straitjacket. And it was funny because April, she noticed my face changed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked down and realized, you're never getting out of the straitjacket in a million years.
He had done it a little different than normal.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So you never got out on stage? You're at a competition.
Yes, I'm on stage.
You're on stage.
I'm doing my act, and it's I simply looked down. I looked up at the audience, and April stopped the music because she knew something was wrong, and that's the thing with it being set to music.
Mm-hmm.
You're married to this now. You know
right.
you
and your time in. Has to be right.
Yeah. Timing has to be right, and I simply replied, folks, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to complete this illusion, and. It was weird because it was almost a look of disappointment on everybody's face, and they thought at first, okay, this is part of the act,
right?
And then they realized I wasn't joking, and they gave me a round of applause
for trying.
Yes, absolutely, and I thanked them and told them they were very, very kind audience. That was in Colon, Michigan. It's about 2 hours away. The magic capital of the world, by the way, actually. Seriously,
the places they have a problem, the
right,
magic capital
right.
of the world.
Let me tell you, Tom, that was a
it's
long,
like going to Hogsworth.
Quiet ride home.
Wow. Wow. So how do you learn from something like that? I mean, will whatever happened at that event ever happen again, or
not in a million years.
So you learned exactly what the snafu was, and you make sure that that's double checked.
In fact, okay. Both of us have realized what it was, and both of us know what to look for.
Okay.
So.
Wow. And again, I don't know if we actually responded or not, but I know how long on average does it take before you do an illusion on stage to master it? Is there a time set that you allow yourself, like in 4 weeks we're going to debut this?
That's actually about the time frame, in about
okay.
4 weeks. And when I start doing something new, or when when April and I start doing something new, it's just like getting a new toy. You know,
mm-hmm.
we tear into this routine and we work it over and work it over and work it over. And honestly, Tom, sometimes when we perform it in front of an audience, we realize, okay, this isn't going to work. We got to change this. We got to change that. Because I'm sure you realize it's one thing to rehearse in front of a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole other ballgame to go and perform it in front of an audience and see, oh, you're not supposed to be sitting there. You're messing my act up
right.
because you're sitting there.
Right.
So,
and you have a stage show. We should say that. I mean, you have an actual show. You have a backdrop. You have side props. You have a lot of things. It's not like you just walk up, put a table and cards or something out, and then do this little side show. You actually have a full production show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And lights, music, everything.
Lights, music, the whole nine yards. Absolutely. It's. I like that word you use. We consider it a production.
Okay. How long does it take to set up?
Well, it takes a minute. It's
okay.
You know, if we set the full show up of the lights and everything, for instance, can I mention another theater?
You can, yes.
Okay. We've done shows at D Performance Comedy Theater in Miller on 500 Lake Street, not that far from Miller Pizza, a couple businesses down. Great venue.
Mm-hmm.
Great venue. Usually my brother and I get there a day or two before and set the lights up. It takes about an hour to set the lights up and run everything. And then we'll get there a few hours before showtime and set everything up just to make sure everything's working right and everything's queued up and spotted in and that sort of thing.
Hmm. April, talking about the things that have gone wrong, And especially with something like the Razor Blade Act. And again, without getting into any details and giving it away, as his wife, as someone who cares for this crazy man, what are your thoughts when he comes up and says, I got a great idea. We're going to bring out a guillotine, a sword, a samurai. He's going to cut my head off and I'm going to glue it back on. I mean, when he comes up with this wild stuff that could be dangerous mm-hmm. in the hands of a normal person, mm-hmm. How do you cope with that?
Okay. I honestly...
And then I take a big shot of bourbon.
No, my trust is in him. Mm-hmm. I trust him. He wouldn't do anything that would put him or myself at danger. So okay. I trust him 100% and I support him. So if that's what he wants to do and he feels we'll be okay with it, then that's what we're going to do.
Okay. And, you know, I always hearken back to Houdini, who we referenced earlier. You know, and he had some problems at the end of his career there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, he couldn't escape.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So, I mean, do you have signals between each other? I mean, obviously you noticed his face changing.
Oh, yeah.
But if you get into a bigger illusion and maybe April's a little further away on the stage for safety's sake or whatever, holding a sign, doing something, do you have a code word, a panic word, or a look, or a...
Well, I mean, we haven't really worked anything out or formally spoke of anything, but I mean, I'd like to think we are very in tune with each okay. other on stage. And again, we do quite a bit of, I don't like the word practice. We okay. do quite a bit of rehearsal.
Okay.
I had a drama teacher in high school that told me the football team practices, we rehearse. So that's, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that always stuck with me. And so... I believe we're really in tune with each other, and like you said, she can see when my face changes or something like that something has gone wrong or something's not quite right. So.
Okay. And you mentioned your brother a few times. Is he at almost all the shows?
My brother comes when we set up the lights and stuff like that, and he knows the act inside and out. I mean, he's a phenomenal light man. It's you know, I remember asking him one time, why did you turn the lights green at this point? He said, because they needed to be turned green. And I said, my God, is that a great answer. He knows exactly when to hit the spotlights. He knows exactly when to hit the gobo lights or when to change the washes. Mm-hmm. And again, he knows the show inside and out. And again, my older brother and I have always been kind of close. And you know, I think he, you know, you mentioned April, how does she cope with this? I believe my brother John worries way more when I tell okay. him I'm going to do these things than April does. In fact, I remember running the razor blades by him, and he was just, you're going to do what?
Well, that was my first thought when you told me that. And then I saw the video. I'm like, oh, my God. You know? I mean, I get squeamish. And
sure,
I like to think I'm a manly man,
sure,
you know,
sure,
a little
sure.
burly there.
Well, then I did my job then if you got
did.
Squeamish.
I did. And that was a video.
Sure,
I don't
sure.
know how I'm gonna handle this. I'm standing in my business here watching you do these things to yourself and saying, please, please don't fail. Please succeed. But how often do you add a new thing? Obviously, if someone books you every year, you want to add new stuff, new songs for musicians, you know, new routines, comedians do. How often do you add or replace a bit?
Well, I try not to replace anything because I really like what we have. I try to add on to it,
okay.
but I try to avoid the lick and stick, if that makes any sense. I don't want to grab an
a lick and stick. Nah, I don't know if I want to go there, but go ahead.
I simply don't want to grab a routine and say, there, we're going to put
okay.
that on there because I want to do something.
You got to fill time.
Exactly. I try to do things that I really want to do. And that flow nice with the routine.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, at the Record Bin, we'll actually be debuting two new routines.
Okay.
May I mention the names?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll be showing you the ropes.
Okay.
And we'll be doing Hands Down. And I don't want to go into what
okay.
Hands Down is, but if you like the razor blades, you'll love Hands Down.
If you fainted the razor blades, we will revive you. We will hand out smelling salts, just like Frankenstein. Again, we're talking about the Halloween Fright Party at the Record Bin, 218 Main Street, the back of the record store, where we have our production room there. We do concerts and things. Well, this will be our first time dabbling with magic. And Reverend Jim will be there, the purveyor of the bizarre, as if this conversation wasn't already bizarre. Then it'll be magic from the asylum with April Rain and Nikki Jade. And will there be a break between? Well, obviously a break, but is there any kind of thing going on between the Reverend and your set as far as that ties in with magic? Or are we just going to take like a musical break? Or
well, we can take a break, Tom, but April and I will have Magic from the Asylum t-shirts, and we'd love to maybe raffle a couple off.
That would be wonderful.
You know, it's just maybe some of the patrons might win one, and then, of course, we'll have them available after the show as well.
Is that something new you've added recently?
This is something we've added. Yeah, and I had a friend of mine in show business who always told me it's not a real show unless you have a t-shirt. So I thought let's do it. Let's get some t-shirts made.
There you go, Jose. We don't have a real show. 7 years. I thought we had a real show.
Now you've got t-shirts at your shop. I've seen them.
All right, Magic from the Asylum. How do we follow you? Is there some website or
absolutely.
Facebook?
Absolutely. You can find us at on the web at www.magicfromtheasylum.com. That's all one word. Or you can go to Facebook and become an inmate at Magic from the Asylum.
An inmate.
And yes, that's yes, sir, Tom. That's we like to refer to our fans
as
at the asylum as inmates.
Okay. All right. We are down to just about a couple of minutes. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you want to let people know? We covered t-shirts, websites, inmates, the show. Give a plug real quick to what haunted house you're at again.
Once again, we'll be at the Tour of Terror Haunted Attraction at 563 West 600 North in Hobart, the old Blast Camp, or the Blast Camp, I guess I should say. Watch for us. We're coming your way. That's all I can say.
All right. And we'll catch you on Sunday at October 27th at the Record Bin. And remember, this is not for young children. Normally, we welcome everybody. This particular couple of hours is for 16 and older only in the back room. We, of course, will still have free coffee, free refreshments, all that kind of stuff. And there is no charge for this show we're talking about. We're going to present it, as we do all of our shows, free to the community. So if you are tired of sitting home and maybe watching football on a Sunday afternoon, or you want a little break from the music, come out and see some magic and some illusions. Our guests have been Nikki Jade and April Rain from Magic from the Asylum. But remember, magic isn't exactly a dirty word, but we prefer illusion. Joe Walsh.